Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Asshole scientist with the God complex. Clara was deemed expendable. How's my daughter? My daughter was expendable. How's your kid more important than mine? It's every man, woman, and brick for themselves. Just follow the butterflies. Make wish. We are talking DC's Doom Patrol Season 2, Episodes 1, 2, and 3, because we're all about Doom Patrol. The AfterBuzz After Show starts right now. Alana, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm excited to be back, and I'm glad to have you, as you are the expert of all things expertise. And I am, of course, Tehran. I host everything that has to do with comic books, basically. So if you don't know me, you don't watch comic book TV. And we are talking Doom Patrol. Ryan is in the back, as always. How are you, Ryan?
It's Benny.
Great.
We have amazing producer named Benny. Shout out to Benny, our new producer. He's awesome.
I'm going to still call him Ryan, and if he doesn't answer, he's going to be cut.
I'm here. I'm here, guys. I'm here.
Ryan's
We're
here
done.
Too.
We're
I'm
done
here.
With you,
I'm
Ryan.
Sorry, I was on patrol, and I'm...
You had your chance.
Had my chance.
You're done.
I'm done.
And that was the last time I'll ever, ever throw to you as we talk Doom Patrol Season 2, Episode 1, 2, and 3. So Episode 1, Fun Size Patrol. Episode 2, Time Patrol. Episode 3, Pain Patrol.
So sorry.
Back to naming them the patrols, we're going to break them down individually, and we're going to start with that premiere episode, episode one, Fun Size Patrol. We're going to break it down as thus, Tiny Town, Dorothy Spinner, Vic. We're going to break each character because each character has their own storyline that's portrayed in this one. Jane, Rita, Larry, Cliff, Niles, of course. And then we get Willoughby Kipling. It's good to see him in the mix before we get to episode two. Alana, what were your overall thoughts on episode one, Fun Size Patrol?
I loved the series premiere. I'm very glad that they dropped all three. At first, I was kind of like, why are they doing this? But I'm really glad that they did because, in my opinion, I think this is somewhat controversial. I think this is the best show, the best new show on TV right now. I said it last year, and my only kind of qualms with it was because since it is so central to DC streaming and people like you and I who love DC enough to subscribe, it was kind of limited in its audience. So I'm really glad that it's on HBO Max. I think it was a real good call having all three episodes drop and kicking it off. I mean, Fun Size Patrol, I thought was a really good kickoff. I'm glad that I've gone back and rewatched the first season though, so that I was kind of centered into what was happening. Because when I rewatched it, there was a lot of things that I'd forgotten. But I do have to say, Tehran, I'm really excited because I just figured out that we're the Zoom Patrol talking about Doom Patrol on Zoom Patrol.
That was actually going to be the name of our special segment. So I'm so glad you brought that up. Zoom Patrol. Oh, Alana, great minds think alike. I'm going to say, Alana, that...
By the way, it's Elena.
Is it? Because just a second ago, you called our producer Benny. So I don't know if you know, okay? But Elena, I'm going to say that when I have you, I hate you. But when you've been gone, you've been missed. Because I love having your voice on these panels because you know so much. And like I did say, great minds think alike. And you are a great mind, especially when it comes to the DC and the comic book stuff, you know your stuff. I mean,
Thanks, man.
Sabrina was great, but Doom Patrol is possibly the best television out right now. Now, I will say Watchmen gave it its run for its money. And to me, Watchmen topped it.
Ryan and I were talking about this. The only reason that I say that this, because I separate it from Watchmen, because since Lindelof went in saying that Watchmen, he had as an idea of kind of a contained, it was kind of assumed it was going to be just the one season. I see it as kind of a limited series. Like, I would put it in the same categories like Chernobyl, which okay. I don't categorize the same as Doom Patrol. Watchmen, though, is freaking amazing. And if you have not watched it, go watch it. Because so holy basically, hell. And you can watch it for free now.
When it comes to Watchmen, you're basically saying it's not TV, it's HBO. And DC's Doom Patrol is back to being TV simply because it's season...
And now it's HBO.
That's a conversation. I do admit and agree both that switching to HBO Max, we knew that DC Universe was problematic. I'm sure we're going to get some flack for saying that, but it was. It was problematic. It limited audiences. And they didn't have enough shows for anyone but us hardcore diehard fans to subscribe to DC.
I will say, though, if you love this show now and you're just getting into Doom Patrol, the streaming service is worth it just because you can read all of the comics. And that is incredible because my omnibus alone was over $100. So, and that's not even all of the issues. So if you want to read it, and I definitely recommend it because for this show, especially, it's the allusions and the references aren't so exact. It doesn't spoil anything. It just makes you more excited about it when these characters show up.
I agree, because when you watch, because it they do have separate, there are differences, of course, but they do it in such a fantastic way that it doesn't bother you. Usually when you watch adaptations and when you watch creations, you're like, oh, that's not like the storyline. But in this case, it doesn't bother you rereading and rewatching Doom Patrol. By the way, if you're just starting Doom Patrol, my only problem with episode one, actually I had two, the first thing that was my problem was the fact that if I was brand new to Doom Patrol, which a lot of HBO Max people might have been, I would have no idea what was going on. You have to watch season one. In fact, I, as a person who covered season one, had to go back and rewatch season one to kind of remember what was going on. It's been over a year. Secondly, I missed Mr. Nobody the way I missed Elena. I did not have what that narration gave so much character to the show, and you don't realize it. It's like you don't know what you've got till it's gone.
Is he gonna be back? I mean, Mr. Nobody has to be. I mean, I know he's like stuck in the painting right now, but that was the only thing about the three was that Alan Tudyk was just oh, he was perfection. He's the perfect villain. So I'm excited to have him come back and Danny the Street. Like, I'm like, damn it. You guys,
I know, what
literally,
happened to
Danny? You bricked my favorite character, yeah, literally.
Definitely that happened. See, with Alan needs to come back. It's not like Mr. Nobody, the concept of Mr. Nobody's still there, but Alan, I could not have someone else do it. I could not have anyone else do it.
Well, he was also filming Resident Alien on Sci-Fi, which still hasn't even come out, I don't think. So
exactly.
It's like...
Exactly. And there's finished completely. So there was that, we all wanted him to come back, right? We all wanted him to come back. Oh, maybe he was just busy. Maybe he was done. He did such a fantastic job that I could completely understand if he decided not to come back. What would you couldn't be like, oh, why didn't you come back? He did what he had to do. He might
drop. I feel like when he does come back, it'll be huge. But I do wish that they had introduced him just because he's one of the best characters, and having some of your best characters out of commission for your new audience, I agree with you. That is,
it takes away. It does.
Yeah.
I would say though, if Alan can't do it, Paul Bettany would be a great Mr. Nobody too.
I just want Alan Tudyk back. I can't, I like at this
so
point,
good.
It's like, it can't be anybody else.
So good. I even liked him in Night's Tale. That's how much of a nerd I am. So let's talk some fun size patrol. Great episode. We start off. Here, they didn't solve problems. Doom Patrol is not known for solving problems, and they did no difference in this episode either. We are in Tiny Town. There is a town. It is tiny. We start off in 1927 at the Carnival London. We see that, and we jump in from Carnival London into Tiny Town. What were your thoughts in watching Dorothy in Carnival London? And then, of course, the other problem, which is, hey, we have no idea what this flashback means, and we're in Tiny Town now. What did you think of that, Elena?
I loved that they are living in Cliff's little town that he created. I thought that was genius, and I loved that little edge. I guess just because the kid in me, as a child, I watched Honey, I Shrunk the Kids so many times. Anytime I see like giant versions of things to make people look tiny that are practical effects, it just, I'm elated. So I did like that. I love Dorothy Spinner. I think that she is an incredible character. I was hoping last season that we would see more of her. And so I'm very excited that this season is kind of geared around her. The Candlemaker is one of the freakiest characters, I think, in comic book history. So getting just a little taste of that. It's not to be too ponderful, but it made me want to wax poetic.
So,
the Candlemaker.
Like I said, I've missed it. Well,
you have it.
I really have. The carnival was cool to see. And of course, where else are you going to start but in a carnival? But Make-Wish is honestly one of the freakiest, creepiest, just, it's ominous. It's all of those things in simple two words. Make-Wish. And then you, of course, see the carnage and devastation. Then you fast forward from there into the episode where the problem is we're still small from last season. We haven't grown. We haven't been made big again. And I like that there were repercussions. I like that Doom Patrol is a show that has consequence. Every action has consequence. You see a lot of shows, especially comic book shows, there are no consequences to the actions. If a car is thrown and it breaks a building, nothing. We never hear about that building again. But in Doom Patrol, you will hear about it. Things will happen and everything has repercussion and comes back. Even Cliff's little tiny town, where we're now staying in this tiny town and we're getting regular pancakes, but grown size popcorn. Like, it's just great. It's great to see. Let's talk about Dorothy Spinner. Dorothy Spinner, of course, is Niles's daughter, who was in Danny and now is back out. And she can bring her imaginary friends to life, that Forever 11, right? And is possibly the most powerful entity on Earth. Reminiscent, by the way, as we know, Doom Patrol is reminiscent of X-Men. It's like the anti-X-Men. Well, Dorothy is clearly the anti-Legion.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, Dorothy is just, I feel like they did a really good job with bringing her to life in this. Herschel, like, just popping up, and like the fact that like a giant terrifying tarantula is one of her cuddly sweet friends, like, just kind of sets up that it's like, oh, so things get real dark with this little girl. Like, if that's
quick,
one of the big
quick,
ones.
By the way, very quickly.
Yeah. I do wish though, and this is something that I started thinking about when you mentioned it about the new viewers. I think that all of this would have been kind of rectified if they had done a 10-minute recap.
Oh, good.
A season one recap, like how they do for Westworld, because it ends up being so long in between seasons for Westworld. They'll do like a big long recap. If they had done just like a 10-minute, if you didn't watch the first season, this is what you need to know, and then had it end with them getting small, I think that would have made all the difference in this.
Which is interesting that you bring that up now, because honestly, they have done that during the season. As we're watching, yeah, they do these recaps. In fact, they do this season already with episode three, and yet we didn't get one coming into episode one. Nothing. It was like cold water just splashed in your face. Take it.
Yeah. And that's if you had seen Mr. Nobody and you had seen Alan Tudyk narrate that 10-minute thing and make
the
it its own
time.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Then it would have been like, oh, okay, you don't see him yet, but know that it's coming. And then it would have been a buildup for like, oh, well, I can't wait to see more from this character that we got teased.
Hire her. Cause that was brilliant.
Hire me, please, HBO.
I agree. Dorothy is a character that is very much the comic book character. Even the look, am I not? Right? Like,
yeah.
they picked a girl that looks exactly like, or I know it's makeup, but still, she looks exactly like the character. The way Harry Potter is Harry Potter, that's who you see when you read the book. It's like, I see that kid.
And it's what's crazy is in real life, she's 20 years old and gorgeous. And you're like,
no.
Yes, she's such a good actress. She's 20 years old and stunningly beautiful.
Yeah, but she's 20 years old, stunningly beautiful, and 4 foot two, because
I know she can so believably play 11.
I know she's amazing. She's an amazing. It's definitely an amazing depiction of Dorothy to watch her and how she is portrayed by Abigail Shapiro. Such a good portrayal. The only thing I don't have, the temperament for that English accent. Her English accent's so thick, I have to rewind several times to understand what she says sometimes. And that's me being extremely uncultured. I'm sorry. I'm sure there are people out there in the chat who can relate. Let's talk Vic. Vic is dealing with his PTSD. So let's get to Vic. Vic and his PTSD. Vic's storyline. Vic is such a, talk about doom. This is doom and gloom, Vic. He's changed. This is a complete 180 from season one, where he was this, I'm going to be a hero. I'm here to help. And now he's kind of like negative Nancy in every way.
I know, he's the true negative man. I like, though, that it makes sense that he and Rita have almost switched mentalities in this. So everybody still fills those role of who wants to be an apprehensive superhero, who wants to be, you know, reluctantly heroic, and who wants to just kind of say, look, I'm out and I got my own stuff to deal with. I like that they've kind of changed the dynamic, but they've also kept the couplings. Like, we know Rita and Larry are BFFs and have been, and we get more of their backstory as it goes on. We still see Cliff and Jane, you know, they're super close. And Vic, man, Vic is just like the antithesis of, you know, it's season one when Rita's like, I don't want to do this. And now he's asking her point blank, do you want to be a superhero? And she's like, no, but yes, I do. And Vic's cool, you're on your own, because I don't want to do this shit anymore.
I don't want to help you either. I don't want to do anything. I like how you put the juxtaposition between Vic and Rita. So let's talk Rita, because she's learning how to use the superpower. She's like, what? So I want to get control of my powers. What? She has blossomed into my favorite character. And I really liked Rita last year, but this year, Rita has come into her own. She's a superhero on the making. She's the one making everything go round. And honestly, she doesn't get enough credit, not as a character and not as an actor as well.
Man, April Bowlby, yeah, she's freaking incredible. I mean, I love Rita, especially this season, because we actively see her go from passive to active.
Yes.
So we kind of see ourselves with the Doom Patrol through her eyes of, you know, no, I could never do that. I'm just a regular person. Like, I've got my own stuff to, okay, there's somebody who needs my help. I'm going to step up if I'm the only one physically here. We saw that with the Cult Patrol last season. And then as it progressed to now, she's like, I'm not going to let this be something that happens to me. I'm going to take control of it and let it be something that I use to my favor. And if somebody comes for my friends, I'm going to do anything I can to kick their ass.
Anything and everything to do so. And that's great too. Larry has, here we get this dichotomy between Vic and Rita. We get another one between Larry and Cliff. Larry is now confronting his own personal demons, like the past with his kids. I mean, so heartfelt, so heartfelt.
That was so emotional, but I gotta say, I also was like, Larry, what the hell? You named your kid Gary?
Yeah, Larry.
Like, you're Larry Trainer and you named your kid Gary Trainer? Like, this is way too Parks and Rec for me. I can't. Like,
sounds about right to me, so I get it.
His brother Jerry Trainer?
Yeah.
No.
it's Gary, Barry, Jerry, and Harry. So,
and Larry, and yeah,
and Fairy and Cherry. There's a whole crowd, a whole trainer crowd. So
the Mary trainers is what they call them.
Larry was, yeah, Mary. I'm sure we could go through all the names, and the chat's going wild with these names right now. But Larry's going through his own stuff with his kids, and then Cliff, of course, gets to the kid thing. But at this point, he's just mad at Niles. And he hates rats. He hates rats, but he loves rats. And he's mad at Niles. I mean, everyone's upset at Niles, but he's furious. He just does not like finding out that he...
I mean, having somebody point blank be like, don't curse in front of my kid, when you're like, you were on tape saying that if you murdered my child, that would be fine. Like, F you, bro.
Technically deemed it expendable if it had to, because, and you know what? I know this is horrible because we are going to talk about Niles as well. Cliff is clearly mad at everyone, and he's mad at Niles, and he's been cursing up a storm. But Niles, who, by the way, is extremely selfish, but Cliff is actually extremely selfish, which we will get into episode 3.
Oh, yeah.
Extremely selfish, and has been so, and we've kept excusing it, but at this point, there is no excuse for it. Niles comes off redeeming in this, in a way, in this episode 1, and then again in episode 3. With episode 1, not only just his love for his daughter, but his responsibility. I have a child that can destroy the entire world. A person who we don't know if or wouldn't want to kill in the first place, hasn't done anything wrong yet, but if she basically deems to do so, everything will be destroyed. And I'm the only one who can protect, keep, and keep the world safe. So there is a justifiable reason I understand, even if I don't condone. What about you, Elena?
I really liked the kind of the microcosm foreshadowing they had too, where she drops Danny, where she's just playing hide and seek and she accidentally splits Danny and the brick into half, because she's not trying to cause harm, but it's like we see him literally ripped in half the same way we saw the patrons ripped in half and covered in wax, where it's like, oh, okay, this is somebody who's going to accidentally inflict carnage. And while his heart is in the right place, we've already seen he considers it a mistake, the way that he has treated Cliff and has treated all of these people as kind of expendable, because he's so focused on his own goal. I really feel like that confrontation with Cliff saying, you know, why is my daughter not as important as yours?
Yeah, that was so tough. That was a harsh one.
That was a big realization for Niles, and I feel like a really good kind of overall message too.
Yeah,
that,
it was very strong.
Doom Patrol drives home. So,
but then again, Clara can't destroy the whole world; only break Cliff's heart. Willoughby Kipling makes that run. This is a character we're familiar with. This is basically a poor man's Constantine. Willoughby Kipling shows up, kind of saves the day. So the entire episode is, we're trying to get big again. Larry's the only one that's normal size. How do we do this? Science isn't working. Let's try magic. Who do we know that does magic? Willoughby Kipling does magic. I have to trade the one thing that keeps me immortal, the rabbit's foot, in order for us to be big again. And he trades it. So now Niles is dying. What did you think of Willoughby Kipling?
I mean, I always like to see Willoughby Kipling make an appearance, but I don't know. I like Baphomet. I thought Baphomet was going to say what up and didn't. And that was
kind of a bummer, but Baphomet would have been a good one.
Yeah. I'm like, I would have liked that, but I don't know. I liked the whole overall overarching storyline. I liked having Kipling come back, and I liked the way that they got big being an impetus to the next thing of the continuum. And you know, Rita really having to step up and take control and time patrol. So I don't know. I thought it was a good setup. I thought it was nice bringing back a character that we had seen briefly and having him be kind of a means to an end.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Carver, of course, brought his buddy back. So we get to see the same people we see in Supernatural are probably going to pop up in Doom Patrol. And this is a time. It was definitely a break from the monotony of the characters that we're used to. Hopefully we'll get Beard Hunter, something. We'll get some other people. I know, disgusting and yet so likable. Willoughby is fun. Of course, I don't think it's the last time we see him this season, even though it's kind of slated. We don't know. So hopefully we get to see him again. Let's jump into episode 2. Let's talk about episode 2, Time Patrol. We're going to break it down as thus. The interview, Niles is mortal. That's a big deal for everyone in the group. Vic's group, he starts going to an actual group, but he's not the only one because Jane's underground is not liking how she's treating them. Ronnie, we get Ronnie. Vic might have a little girlfriend. Rita is trying, and I think no one notices how hard she's trying. Even if she doesn't succeed, she's the one trying. And of course, Dr. Time. What time is it, Rita? Oh, it's time to kill Dr. Time. So we get all these. What were your overall thoughts on episode 2?
I straight up loved everything about episode 2. Having like the roller disco Donna Summer, I'm like, dude, if I was just a time traveling badass, it was like, I could do anything I want at any point in time, I would bring everybody that I love to just be like, this is the best. Like, come on, y'all. Toot toot.
So you're basically it's there. Basically, you're there right now, just to let you know. But I like this episode, but I didn't like it as much as episode 1, but it was a very necessary episode because of the furthermore.
I loved it.
Development. I liked episode 1 because it was very creepy. Episode 1, I liked a lot. Episode 3 was my favorite of the three. And episode 2 was, to me, a great bridge to get into this story arc of Niles and how Niles is feeling bad. And the interview scene, let's talk about that, because the interview was very poignant. You pointed out Cliff basically saying, why is my daughter expendable and yours is not? Very strong words. You're getting the reverse, where now Niles is in the seat, he's the patient this time, and he's being interviewed. What are your thoughts on those interviews?
I mean, I like that they have the tapes kind of lead everything along, and then we get those flashbacks as paralleled to what's going on now. I feel like Larry's character is the one that uses them the best, because we actually have the negative spirit selecting particular scenes for him that progress his character. I mean, the whole thing with him with Gary just ripped my heart out this episode. I'm just, ugh.
True.
But I mean, I like that they have them. I feel like they could be utilized potentially a little bit less, just because I feel like once we see him say something so shocking and horrifying as your daughter is deemed expendable so that I can stay with mine longer, like, you hear that and you immediately get it. Like, Cliff has reason to be pissed. We really don't need to see anything else.
The interviews, just the shockingness of them, the harshness of them, the abrasiveness of them, they were very strong, especially for those of us who have watched season 1 and understand what the interviews mean. It's great to watch how they played out in this one. I agree with you regarding Larry's, but I think Cliff's was, that line just resonated in my head, because I think it's just so piercing to the point. There was no beating around the bush with it. Niles is mortal now. So Niles is 139 years old. He's mortal. He can die. And the team is feeling it all in different ways. Of course, Cliff is like, this, you deserve this, basically. And Rita is like, oh, we need you. And so does Jane. Mm-hmm. I think the surprises of their reactions. What did you think of Niles being mortal?
I mean, I think that it was nice to see him kind of in a vulnerable position, because they all kind of hate him, but they still have that codependent relationship where they are like, this is really my only family, per se.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to see how each of the characters kind of play into it. But I think it was also really interesting and really telling to see the interviews, the Cliff interviews of him talking about Clara. Of Niles talking about Clara, juxtaposed with the whole Dr. Time plotline of,
yes,
you know, isn't a bad guy. Like, you told us that this is the terrible Dr. Time, that he was doing all of these horrific things. He's just partying, like, and just living his life. Like, he, and that's not a helmet, that's his head. And if we save you, we murder an innocent being. And Niles is just like, oh, well, so you didn't get it? Bummer. All right.
Yeah. Too bad, Dr. Time. What were your thoughts on Dr. Time as a character? I liked the way he looked. It was very cool. I'm sure you loved him.
I loved him. I absolutely loved him. His voice is like everything. The way that he was talking to Rita, I loved too, because it's like, oh, if you went through all of time, that would make sense. And he's like, yeah, you're you are just as relevant to me now as you would have been then, because time is relevant to me. So
yeah,
I loved that.
It's always fun when you play with time. Vic's group and Ronnie. What do you think of Ronnie, and what do you think of Vic needing to go to group?
I love this. I think that it's about damn time. We saw a little bit of it season one with, like, you know, the Tinder app, the fake Tinder, whatever they called it.
Yeah.
And him, you know, not really being able to find somebody because of this being stuck between his prior self, Vic, and Cyborg, and these two aspects of himself, and not being able to find somebody who's that intermediate. I love this storyline. I love that character. I think she is awesome. I think kind of shout out to them too for being, you know, unintentionally timely with calling out how the system really failed people. Yeah. And calling out that one kid saying, you know, don't call the cops right now because you're defining this person by this one action. Don't define somebody by the worst thing they ever did. Like, you yourself would be defined as the person who killed your mother. Do you want that to be what you're seen as forever? Don't apply that to somebody else.
Very relevant right now, actually, socially.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know, props to the show for touching on that. And I hope now that it is more prevalent and is more talked about in our everyday culture that they kind of touch on that more in the show. Yeah. Going into next season, if there is one. I hope there is. But
there has to be, because this is clearly a premier show, especially for DC and HBO Max. We have Rita who's trying in Jane's Underground, but we can roll those into episode 3 because they actually play much more going forward with Rita trying, and of course Rita's the reason of Dr. Time's demise. And Jane's Underground is basically rebelling against her. She's using the serum to suppress her powers, and she's become a little addicted. So episode 3, Pain Patrol, we have Red Jack, who's basically Jack the Ripper and Monster of Florence, this character that basically gets off on pain.
I have to say, though, how you were talking about, like, the thick accent. I was like, Dorothy got it from Young Niles. Because...
Oh, that's hilarious. Young Niles' accent. That's so real.
It's like, it's the same. It's like, hello, Jack the Ripper.
Hello, Bummer. Yeah, it really was. Like,
oh, God. Okay.
So, episode 3, Pain Patrol, we're going to break it down by Red Jack, Jane and Cliff's road trip, Cliff going home with the daughter, and of course, Jane goes home too, because Jane has an intervention. Ronnie can get that Vic, if you know what I'm talking about. 1965, Larry, Rita and Larry, you break it, you buy it, Danny gets broke. So we're going to break it down as thus. Let's get into Red Jack. Oh, obviously this was a great episode, but Red Jack was scary and creepy and, like, needs his own scary movie.
I mean, you have to be a badass character to make butterflies terrifying.
Oh my gosh.
For me to be like, oh shit, no, it's a butterfly. Like,
not the butterfly.
Like, that's a testament to a good character right there. I also liked having it come off of the Dr. Time episode, having it be a famous character from history, you know, this historical unsolved thing being something supernatural and kind of having these things converge. So I thought it was a cool character. I like that we got to see more of Larry, and we got to see Larry, you know, really tormented, and got to see Rita really flex her powers to be
flex,
like,
her powers. That's why I was like, we could roll it in. We got to see a lot of things. I thought Red Jack was fantastic, freaky, creepy, all those things. And getting into that world and watching him torment Larry and watching him torment people and just very callously and casually kill people. But then there was that moment between Red Jack and Niles where Red Jack basically is like, Niles, I need you to be my apprentice, my partner, because you like doing the same things I do. Talk about projecting. Do you think Red Jack and Niles are the same?
I mean, I think that it definitely was a commentary on how the quest for knowledge and scientific studies we've seen throughout history about how in the quest for knowledge and the quest for answers and the quest of satiating curiosities that people have done horrific things. So I think this is kind of saying, look, you know, their curiosities can be indulged, but to a point, because when you start negating the value of others and the intrinsic value of their lives and their quality of life, then you've become nothing more than the monsters that you're trying to fight.
And I think Niles is actually a monster, not like Red Jack, but there are definitely similarities. There is something there, and especially for Red Jack to pick that up and be like, well, the boy that you were in the 1800s when I was Jack the Ripper, who wasn't shocked by me murdering this woman, you have something inside you. And I think it's great to point that out. Jane and Cliff go on this road trip because Cliff's like, let's get the F out of here. We need to leave. And Jane's like, F yeah, let's go. They go on this road trip. Cliff goes to his daughter's house. What did you think about that scene where it's knock, 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 I'm your dad?
I mean, yeah, Cliff, come on, be a little bit more tactful than this. Like, I did like, though, that we had all of this build up to where Jane was saying, you know, that was not your fault, but this is.
Yeah, right now is. Your daughter's in there bawling her eyes out because you're ruining her baby shower.
Yeah.
Because you're being selfish.
And we kind of see that echoed with all of the characters. I mean, with Larry, too, how he's saying, you know, I can't do anything about how I treated my children in the past. And it's like, right, but at this moment, you have the ability to. So we saw that in the previous episode, how he, you know, goes and sees the tribute to him, but then leaves and doesn't join the funeral. It's, I think, a really subtle but really powerful message that is, you are responsible for your actions in this moment. Whatever happened up to this point, whether it was your fault or not, what you are doing now, if you're causing others pain, you have to be cognizant of it, because whether it's fair or not, you're now causing pain to somebody that you love.
That is the case. It's not too late. It's never too late. A mirror is not just for reflection, it's also for correction. So when you see your own actions, then you can change it and fix it and do something about it. Jane is, however, not looking in a mirror. She's looking at intervention. People are telling her she needs to change. All her personalities, Kay, Driller Bill, everybody's in there like, hey, this is what you've done to us. They're doing a straight intervention. And then at the end, they cage her up. What do you think about
that? Pay to cage, baby.
Yeah, this is clearly going to have huge consequences.
I am very excited. Little spoiler, if you haven't watched the little snippet of HBO's preview for this season, spoiler alert, we are going to see Miranda at some point.
Yes.
So the fact that Jane is not dealing with her problems and all of her other personalities are coming for her for it, I'm really excited to see this, because truthfully, watching Jane Patrol last season, I was like, I could watch a 3-hour movie that's just the underground.
Of course, the underground's brilliant.
I also want to see more of Danny, so I'm like, don't be split forever.
I know, Danny looks done for, right? Even Niles, like, it was so bad, Niles would rather reflect on all the things he's done wrong and start crying than try to fix Danny. Danny is broken. He's Humpty Dumpty.
A new Cliff before he tries to put this brick together. And I'm like, no, Danny, my favorite.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a slimmer, cooler Cliff, but we'll see how that works out. Danny, so we have Dorothy. Dorothy's a cutie. Dorothy makes breakfast. Dorothy plays hide and seek. Dorothy breaks Danny. What were your thoughts on that?
Dorothy's dope. I love everything about her, other than the fact that Danny is now split in half.
Yeah, Danny's definitely split in half.
I'm glad Flex took the Danny's ins, and this makes me a little bit worried, because they made a big point to mention that last season, that the Danny's ins are not on Danny the Street, that everybody was brought to safety.
Yeah.
If Danny is gone, I am flipping out. I'm just going to be like, HBO, fix this.
I liked what you said, though. It shows how even in good intentions and in her playfulness, she can still break things, and that's a foreshadow of some type. We get Ronnie actually gets Vic. So Ronnie basically sets Vic up, is like, come to group, even though there is no group. It's just them two, and they end up
getting that Vic with a capital D.
Exactly. Getting that Vic, right? So here, and then as soon as Vic starts kind of catching feelings, you see Ronnie push him away and not show up to the diner. And Vic, of course, checks Ronnie's phone, basically going through her file, and sees that she's guilty of manslaughter. So
I thought she sent that to him, didn't she?
I mean, she sent a file, a confidential file, but he like went to it and he went through it. He could have. And also, I didn't like how Vic walked outside and just didn't see her sitting in the car. Like, you're a superhero.
Well,
girl.
See, to me, I like this because this echoed how we saw him where Grid was when he was doing the tender thing last season.
Yeah.
And Grid went and saw the girl and he saw the reaction to Cyborg, like what he considered like his like dirty secret.
Yeah.
And then we see her watching him. Like, to me, I was like, oh, this is just like season one, like, but reversed. So
played apart.
I did like that, but I was like, yeah, I mean, she's not even trying to hide.
Yeah, I mean, I like the
she's
fact that Vic
very
really
parked in front.
Got it in, and I want more. I really want more. I really like her, and I hope something happens more, and I hope Vic doesn't take it so personal. And then, of course, we got another relationship, kind of, with Larry and Rita. Now, we know that Larry is gay, but I don't care. Those two, there's something. Rita and Larry, there's something there.
They're just best friends. They're just, like, genuine, like, connected souls. I think that there's definitely platonic soulmates, and I think that they are, you know, platonic soulmates. We see more of their backstory and more of how she was the first person to really embrace him as his radioactive self. And I'm also glad that we got some backstory on the medicated special bandages.
Yeah, the bandages were, they actually explained it really well in two sentences. Oh, these are special. Okay. And it really just been like, okay, that's all we needed from day one.
Yeah. I really, really like that this show gives you little bits as it goes and doesn't try to set everything up linearly.
Yeah, I love their connection. They are definitely soulmates, and even if it's in a platonic way, there is definitely a connection between these two. Even that gentle hand and the gentle kiss on the cheek, and it's like, you're not a lost soul if someone's trying to find you. And that's where we leave off, waiting for episode 4 to hit.
Because they both are becoming the most, I think, like, we see the literal metamorphosis of them getting the wings, and I don't think that that was an accident at all. It's like showing that these characters have literally transformed into different people.
They have transformed. Let's get into that news and gossip you have for us, Elena.
Yeah, so showrunner Jeremy Carver talked to IGN a little bit about what we're going to see this season. We've already seen more from Dorothy Spinner, and we've teased the Candlemaker a little bit, but apparently we are going to see a lot more of both. So that will be pretty intense. I'm really excited, though, because in the comics, there's this government-sponsored team known as the Sex Men, and we're going to see them.
Yes!
So
we can't wait to see some Sex Men.
If you like the Everybody Has an Orgasm on Danny Street scene,
you're going to love this.
You're going to love Sex Men.
Well, let's play our special segment, Zoom Patrol, where we zoom to a character that basically showed a superhero moment, our favorite superhero moment. What is yours, Elena?
I would say episode 1, I would say Niles, because he gives up his immortality for the sake of other people. I think that really shows growth. Episode 2, Time Patrol, I would say Rita, because I think she shows the most growth in that episode. And episode 3 is really kind of a toss-up, because all of the characters, I think this was a great episode to end on, because I can't wait to see what happens episode 4 with all of them, because I think they all kind of tie for MVP.
We'll see what happens, but for me, episode 3, it was Jane when she says, maybe that's not your fault, but this right now is, and that was special. I can't wait to see Jane try to get out of that. And with that being said, we have gone over all 3 episodes. We will be talking so much more as we get into episode 4. I would love to predict, but honestly, it's Doom Patrol. There's nothing to predict. You have no idea what's going to happen. What you can do is talk to us on social media. Elena, where can people find you if you want to be found?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan, A-L-A-N-A-J-O-R-D-A-N, and on Instagram at Elena J. Jordan. And you can also check me out on the Drunk Banthas podcast, talking about last season of Doom Patrol, a little wrap up of all of it. That's out this week.
And of course, I am Teran, literally at I am Teran all across the board. That's IAMTERAN. Find me also hosting a paneling on a slew of other AfterBuzz after shows, because all of your favorite TV shows are my favorite TV shows too. Until next week, where we talk more Doom Patrol.
Wait, real quick, before I forget, I totally forgot. AfterBuzz TV, I have to shout out, you guys, of course, love AfterBuzz because you're watching it right now. The award-winning AfterBuzz TV won the 2020 Communicator Awards for one of our interviews last year. So, woohoo! Got the trophy. So, shout out to AfterBuzz. You're the best.
We are the best. And by we, I mean not only us three, but all of you at home. Thank you for keeping the chat alive. Everyone in the chat, we always get to your comments. We love your comments. Keep those comments coming. Share, subscribe. If you're listening to us on iTunes, give us 5 stars. Spread the love. Just don't spread corona. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.